Well, hello, this is Colin Gehring with another edition of Golf Training Aids Reviewed, and we're here today with Bobby Eldridge, and Bobby is a very experienced golf instructor. I think he's been around golf an awful long time and taught a lot of people. Just wanted to say hello, Bobby.
How you doing? Thanks for calling me.
Yeah, great to have you on our call with us today, Bobby, and you know, you're down in sunny Arizona in Scottsdale today, just enjoying the beautiful sunshine. I'm here in Vancouver, enjoying the rain as best as I can in our beautiful city. But tell us a little bit more about what it is that you have done as a golf pro. Tell us about your experience and your background. And I know you've probably taught thousands of students.
Well, I was blessed that I grew up in Southwest Florida, and my mother was a golf professional, a teacher.
Oh, okay.
And so she taught me, my brothers and sisters. My sister's a golf pro in Florida, and my brother's a golf pro in Chicago. So I have been holding on to her golf skirt for a long time, watching her teach as a little one. So when I left Southwest Florida in the mid-70s, I headed out on the road of teaching, and I haven't stopped. And I even was fortunate to do a clinic in couple times in your country. So,
oh, great.
I've been a lot of places, taught a lot of people, and never stopped teaching. Once I gave that first one, I remember the date. So I've had a lot of fun, and now I have these DVDs that sort of give you an insight into how I teach and what I believe in, and they cover the game from A to Z.
Yeah, that's perfect, and that's really my first introduction to you. I saw a little bit, I think I found it on the internet, about some of your video products, and I was just curious about them, so I ordered them and went through them myself, and I thought it was excellent training. And really what I like so much about your DVD series, Bobby, is that you do such an excellent job of covering the basics and the fundamentals. What can you tell us about the importance of that?
I don't know if there's enough that can be said. One of the tour players from the Ryder Cup, it could be, I don't know, Johnny Miller or Tom Watson. Now I'm thinking it's more like Watson. He said that maybe we needed to get back to the basics, that maybe we don't teach the fundamentals and the basics of the fundamentals enough here now in our country anymore. I don't know. It's such a difficult game when you do it correctly that I think that if you're trying to compensate, you spend your whole life trying to compensate, I don't think that you will see many Lee Trevinos in our sport from here on out, because the fundamentals have to be so correct not to have to compensate all the time.
Yeah, and you know, it just makes the game so much easier if you do the basics and the fundamentals right.
Correct.
Now, you know, one of the big questions that I have, and I see this so often. In fact, it was really interesting. Last time I was out golfing here in Vancouver, actually, was with a guy that said he has a condo that sits above a par 3 hole. And so he basically gets to see how people line up. And he said probably at least 90% of people that hit off the tee box are lined up incorrectly. What can you tell us about that?
Did he say which direction?
No, he didn't.
I'm sure that of those 90%, that 70% are aimed, if it's a longer par 3, 70% are aimed to the left and the others aim off the right.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because they're reacting to their misses, and I've always believed that.
Yeah.
If you went and watched Lee Trevino play golf, you didn't know who he was, you'd probably give him two aside, you know, because he aims it miles off to the left. And the only reason I'm using him is because he compensated sort of more with exaggeration than most good players. And it gives you an idea that he aimed miles left because he knew it was going to the right.
Yeah.
So you have a choice as an amateur golfer. You can continue to aim left and hit it right and hope that it comes down in play, or you can start aiming straight and try to figure out how to make it go right. And I've always believed that that was the better route. That you, if you're stuck on 18 or 25 and you're aiming miles left or miles right, you have so much work to do to get to be a 12 or a 10 without aiming correctly. But you're going to lose a lot of golf balls in the meantime.
Yeah.
Until you get yourself fixed. So.
Yeah.
But
that's interesting. Really what you're saying there, Bobby, is that it's much easier to just start off square. And if you want to, you know, move the ball one way or another and learn eventually to draw it or fade it, that's a lot easier to learn if you're actually square all the time.
Colin, you know what I've said for 30 years? If everybody had to aim straight, I'd be out of business in a year. So, you know, if you make them stand on the side of a hill with the ball above their feet and hit the first 2,000 shots before they go out on the golf course, I'd be out of business.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news, bad news is nobody's going to do it. But, yeah, if you can aim straight, then you can fix the problem. But you can't fix it if you continue to aim left or right.
So let's talk about how to actually fix the major problem of aiming squarely, Bobby. What do you teach people how to do that?
Well, the problem with just someone going out and laying a club down on their feet line and saying, oh, I aim left. Well, if they aim it correctly, that's only immediately that's 10% of the fix. Now you got to know how to fix it. And that's where it gets, you know, you might misdiagnose it. You might not know how to fix it. But the first thing I do, the very first thing I do, when I have someone aims miles left and cuts across it, is I make them aim miles right and make them learn how to release it. Because we don't really know if the cart came before the horse. We don't know if they were a slugger when they started and then they aimed left to compensate, or they aimed left and taught themselves to slice it. Because it's a very difficult sport to aim because we stand on the side of the ball.
Yeah.
So if you know, it's so difficult, and I try, it's almost comical, but I'll stand there and put a club down on their feet line, and when I'm teaching, and get them to aim straight, and they'll hit three balls good, and then they flick the club away. And I'll say, well, I'll do that. I'll say, well, I can't do that on the golf course.
Huh.
And I say, well, you're not going to learn it on the golf course if you don't learn it here.
Yeah.
So the other problem with aiming is that your mind's eye doesn't see straight. I'm sure there's a number of people that don't aim straight because of vision. Maybe there's 5% or 2%. But your mind's eye, if you slice it and there's OB right, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to aim it miles left. So it's very difficult, but I'm telling all of your listeners right now, I haven't practiced without a straight edge in 25 years. So no matter how well I'm hitting it, I put those two straight edges down, one for the ball and one for my feet, and I chip, pitch, putt, hit full swings, hit drivers with two straight edges. I can't stress that enough.
So. Yeah, otherwise you're going to probably get yourself in bad habits if you're not doing that, because you're going to start overcompensating because you're starting to hit shots maybe – you know, maybe you're starting to slice a little bit, but it's because your alignment is improper and you're starting to overcompensate.
Correct.
100%
correct.
Okay. Now, what about when people are actually lining up to the ball? I know you teach a little bit about that in your DVDs, about how to actually get behind the ball and line up and actually do your setup procedure. Tell us about that.
I believe that in intermediate targets, I believe that it's easier to aim the club base. Well, can I back up just a second?
Sure.
You won't believe this, but there's still a huge percentage of the people that think that their toes, knees, hips, and shoulders should go where the target is. And what happens is that if you do that in golf and then put the club down, the face will be aiming miles right of where you want to go. So your toes, knees, hips, and shoulders have to go parallel left of your target. And all that means is the club face in our sport aims at the target, and then you stand parallel to it. Okay, so let's move backwards. You get behind the ball, whether it's a chip, a pitch, a full swing, and you pick out an intermediate target. An intermediate target to me is one that's, it really isn't intermediate. It's shortly between the ball and the hole, close to you, where you can see it. So, mm-hmm. because it's so much easier to aim at something 5 feet away than 100 yards away.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick that out, you walk around to the side, and the very first thing you do is put the club on the ground, sole the club the way it was built in the factory, with it aiming at this intermediate target, be it a divot, a twig, a blade of grass, whatever. And then you point the handle towards your belt buckle. Put your feet down parallel. Check your shoulder alignment. I talk a lot about that in one of my DVDs, the full swing, the first one. And make sure that you're square to where you want the golf ball to go. One of the biggest mistakes, most common mistakes amongst amateur golfers is they get everything set and then they get a peek and they open up the shoulders. It's a big mistake.
Yeah.
They don't peek down the line. They turn and look. And then when they come back, their shoulders are aimed way left.
Interesting.
And that will make, so that's a big challenge.
Well, that reminds me of an old lesson I read in a golf magazine with Jack Nicklaus, and he talked about actually just turning his head rather than turning his shoulders to actually, you know, to look down the line. And interestingly, when I saw him play, I watched him do exactly that, and he keeps his shoulders so still and just turns his head to look. Very interesting.
And he putts that way. You know, you have to be very careful in putting because when you're hitting a driver, you know, 20 yards offline with a driver isn't always a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
2 inches with a putt is a big problem.
Yeah.
So he putts with that way where he takes a peek down the line and not turn up and open the shoulders.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you say too, Bobby, as far as taking dead aim to one specific spot right in front of your club face, because it's very difficult, as you say, for your eye to know whether your club face is square to a target that's 250 yards down the fairway. It's very difficult to make the little small adjustment. But if you pick out a target that's just, you know, a few inches or a few feet in front of your club face, it's much easier to line up square to that target than one that's 200 yards down the fairway, and much makes a lot more sense. I learned that a number of years ago from a teaching pro that showed me how to walk through this process, and you really see any golf professional on TV, that's how they always set up. So that's a great lesson for us to be watching and learning for. Hey, I want to go to some questions here from some of our viewers who have our listening audience who have asked some specific questions that they want to get answered, Bobby. And the first one is from Dr. Mo, and Dr. Mo, I don't know if it's a Dr. Mo is a girl or a guy. You got a picture of a girl here. Anyways, the question is about driving position. Tell us more about driving position. How to set up for driver.
Okay, there's a little bit of misunderstanding because the driver's so long. Now, in a perfect world, you would do everything that I would tell you to do, that I told you to do a couple minutes ago about setting up.
Mm-hmm.
Because the driver is, like, let's just call it a foot longer than your wedge.
Okay.
Then the ball is going to be a foot further forward in your stance than your wedge.
Okay.
So when you address the golf ball, there's a little challenge. Some people I have to regress a little bit. The hosel of a wedge is more up and down than a driver. The hosel of a driver is bent a hair back,
mm-hmm.
to compensate for this. So you don't have to do anything other than stand there. But
mm-hmm.
so many people think that they have to turn their shoulders open to be square because it's further forward. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. The club is designed to sit further forward and have your shoulders square. So when you get ready to address the golf ball, check to make sure your chin is up. That's a common mistake. Make sure your spine is long. You're bent at the waist, slightly flex the knees. The arms are just hanging. They don't have to be rigid. And make sure the belt buckle and the butt of the club are pointed at each other. And from there, that's like a really good setup. Now, of course, what's come along, the mistake I've seen recently is because the golf clubs have such big heads on them, people are a little confused on how high to tee it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the masses are teeing those drivers a little too high. That would be my only remark to it. But,
so then, you know, basically the way to measure that is, if my understanding is correct, is to either get a product like golf dust or some golf tape that you put on your club face to see if you're actually hitting the sweet spot of your driver.
That's great, and baby powder.
Oh, okay.
Take a little thing of baby powder, sprinkle it on there, give it a whack, and you'll see. First of all, I think you kind of can see if it's going a little too high.
Mm.
And then if it's going a little too high, you can tee it down just a hair. Some people get under it a little too much because they're afraid these big-headed drivers that need more air time on the tee for the ball to go up. But that other setup, the common mistake is the chin too far down and bent over a little too much. I very rarely tell a weekend golfer to bend over more. I'm usually propping them up more rather than bend over. Very few of them stand too tall.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, Bobby, because I think posture is a very important element, and I think if people are slouched over and they're in a certain way, you need to send, your back needs to be, how do I want to say, like you don't want to be hanging over and drooping over the club and in a poor posture. Tell us about that.
Well, for the younger kids, it seems to be easier. One of the drills that I go through in one of the DVDs that I lay a shaft along my spine. So as long as it's touching my belt buckle on my backside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I can push my head back so my head touches the shaft, like the grip end. Did you get a visual on that?
Why don't you go over it again and make sure people understand exactly what you're saying? I think I do, but...
Reach around and take, like, your driver and put it along from your tailbone all the way up to the middle of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then your head and your shoulder and your belt buckle should all touch that shaft. And then you bend at the hips.
Mm.
Now I will have to say this, even though I believe this big time. It's not easy for some of us to do. It's not easy for me, and I've been doing this forever. Is it because we can't get our shoulders back as much as we used to, and there are some muscles shrinking? But let me tell you, it's a big, big thing if you can get the correct posture and not be bent over too much. The more you bend over, the more you have a tendency to swing the club up. Now, that's okay if you had a wedge in your hand. But if you have a driver in your hand, you need something a little more round.
Well, it's very interesting as you talk about the anatomy and how it all works together. You know, the head is such a heavy part of the body, and it seems like if your head is hanging low or kind of drooping down, it's going to certainly affect the way that your body naturally swings.
I believe that. I believe that the club, it's very difficult to swing. It wants to go up too much. So getting your chin up helps you turn.
Very interesting. I hadn't thought of that before, and I really like that idea. I'll keep that in mind as I'm making my
your own game.
My next shot. Now, here's another question, just a general question about pitching. They say, I suck at pitching. That's from Brad. And so maybe you can give us some quick, easy tips about how to improve your pitching.
Well, unfortunately, Brad didn't tell us what he does wrong. Now, this is a great tip for all of your viewers. When you're seeking advice, I'm hitting my bunker shots poorly. Well, you need to take it a step further. But let me guess it, but Brad's what his challenges are with pitching. How about if I give you like a lesson for the masses?
Sure.
Maybe I'll hit on Brad. A lot of people hit it fat because they're trying to lift it up. A lot of people hit it low. If they do hit a pitch shot, they hit it solid and it's low and it rolls over the green. So unless he's doing something different, that might have worked for him. Okay?
Yep.
So here's my advice. Check your ball position. The ball has to be anywhere from the middle to just a little bit forward in your stance. 70% of your weight has to be on your left leg, your lead leg, forward leg. And the handle of the golf club has to be over towards your belt buckle, which means that you'll take a little bit of loft off of it. Now from there, the arms only swing back and up. So when you go back, big common mistake, don't chase the golf club with your body. 70% of your weight has to be on your left side when you're at the top of the backswing. Now in the downswing, the arms swing back down. The leading edge of the golf club has to catch the ball, the bottom of the ball first, and then you have to have a low follow through. So, Brad, if you're out there and you're listening, or if you get this in whatever form you get it in, I think that some of that might have helped you. I hope it did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you're seeing in a lot of ways you wanted to keep your body quite still in a pitch shot.
Very, very, very quiet.
Okay.
Very quiet.
All right. And Steve had a similar question about how to do a lob shot, and I'm assuming that's where you want to take your highest lofted wedge and chip it up over a bunker. Sometimes you're going to be in the rough to do that. Can you explain how to do that? Obviously, that's a shot that the pros do so well, and amateurs, it seems that they have quite a bit of trouble with it. So that shot, you're obviously going to have to practice a lot, but tell us about how to do that, Bobby.
That isn't there isn't a big change in pitching the ball with a wedge or a lob wedge or the gap or the sand from the method that I just mentioned. I think what happens with the amateur golfer is that the higher lofted the club, the more difficult it is to hit it because it's very intimidating to them. The other thing you have to remember is that for the amateur golfer is that we use our lob wedge to pitch the ball in and around the green. We don't try to hit it for distance. But it's very difficult. When you take a 5-iron, a flat face club, and you try to chip or pitch a shot with it, not pitch, but hit a short shot, it's not that difficult because the face is flat. You make contact. When you put a lofty club on the ground, for the weekend golfer, they feel as though they have to scoop it. And if there is a lesson for the masses, this is the one tip that I will call a priceless tip of the day. I haven't practiced a pitch shot from a good lie in 40 years.
Interesting.
My mom used to step on them, throw them on as hard as she could in the long rough, put them under a tree, hard dirt, bare grass, cart trails. In other words, the worse the lie that you can practice, the better you're going to become at pitching the ball, especially when you get on the golf course and you find it has a nice lie to it. The lob shot, the other thing, last thing I'll mention about the lob shot is this. You have to start picking your chances of success. So if you have to pitch it over a bunker and the pin is tight, can you make bogey if you use a pitching wedge or sand wedge and pitch it 20 feet by? Or do you go ahead and try that one-in-a-million shot, the most high-risked, dangerous shots I've ever seen on a golf course are done by 36 handicappers, right? So.
Well, I tend to do that myself, Bobby, and I kind of like to make those hard, risky plays and end up sometimes with a double or a triple bogey because I'm trying to pull off some miracle shot. So that's
Don't we all?
We all like to be the hero and make these magnificent shots. Now, one more question here from Rich. Just some ideas on bunker shots and how to get out of a steep bunker.
Mm-hmm. Rich, first and foremost, ball across from your left foot. 70%, 80% if it's a high-lip bunker of the weight on the left side. Be careful not to open the face a lot because it intimidates a lot of golfers. But the more you open it, the higher it'll go. Now, here's the trick. It's a full golf swing as though you had a driver in your hand or a 5-iron or a 4-wood. But you don't turn your shoulders in the backswing. let the arms swing up, let them swing down, chop some sand, and follow through low. Turn through the left hip as you make contact. Now, if you're struggling, first of all, don't forget that we can't hit it out and over a high lip bunker from a poor lie. So it has to be a perfect lie. Lay the face open, ball forward, weight left, full driver swing up, full driver swing down, catch some sand, and follow through low. And I wouldn't take that to the golf course until I could do it from no lip or medium lip bunker shots.
That's very good, Bobby. And it reminds me of one thing. It seems to me that I see a lot of, especially beginning golfers do, is they kind of, their swing stops in the stand. They kind of chop at the ball rather than swing through it. Do you say that you'd see that happen a lot?
Yes, and I'm going to say that that has a lot to do with fear factor, and here's why.
Yeah.
If you hit the only time you can hit a poor shot in a bunker is if you hit the ball first. So we're taking a sport where 99% of the time we hit the ball first, and then there's an element of the sport where if you hit the ball first, you've hit a poor shot. So you have to learn a shot to where you don't hit the ball. Now, that sounds easy to you and I. We've done it for a while.
Yeah.
But to a new golfer, when you say to them, you can hit this well if you don't hit it,
yeah,
that's a very difficult concept. So they come in, they plop the sand, and they don't turn through. So it's full swing up, full swing down, catch some sand, but follow through low.
Yeah, that's really good. And that should, you know, make it pop up really nice and high and spin and stick fairly quickly on the green if it's practiced and done properly. Well, that's excellent advice. Now, tell us a little bit more about, it's difficult, I think, for people to really see some of this. And I love your instructional videos because they go through just so many different elements. Like your bunker video has so many different aspects of how to make all kinds of different bunker shots in different conditions. And maybe you can just tell us a little bit about the video series that you've produced, Bobby.
Well, long before we produced it, we thought in what was important. And we were, you know, I just wrote forever all these different topics, the full swing, the short game, the driver, and then putting. So that's sort of the order that it came out of, was I did the full swing first, and then I did a short game one. And the short game has some pitching and chipping and then some putting, and then I go into the driver and draw a DVD, and the bunker just came out, and it's been quite a hit. What it is that it's just was my way of teaching that I did for 35 years, and we just captured it. And it isn't is it revolutionary and new, and is it gonna? No, it's the fundamentals of the game. And I think that if we get back to the fundamentals, all of us, that you'll start to improve. And
I absolutely agree.
I believe that it's I try to make it simple. I've tried to make my instruction, the way I've trained people and taught people for the last 35 years, I've tried to make it simple. And I've taught every level, and I've had very blessed with the success I've had. And the DVDs have just been, you know, just incredible. People love them. So it covers the entire game in a simple way.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I really liked about your DVDs especially is they're nice little short lessons. So there's just enough that you can take one lesson at a time and then go practice that and then come back and practice a different part of making a bunker shot. Or, you know, the one I really like is how to make a draw, because I think that's for a lot of people. I'd say probably 70% of the golfing population has a problem with slicing. And that's the biggest, you know, articles I've written on that, and when I've covered that in different topics, that seems to be one of the number one issues, that people want to know how to overcome a slice. Maybe we can just talk very briefly about your ideas, how to overcome a slice. What are the quickest ways that you can help people solve that dilemma?
Well, here's the funny thing about the draw DVD. It got a lot of people writing in and saying, hey, you took my slice away. You know, learning how to draw, I mean, let's face it, this game is very difficult. It's difficult at every level, and learning to not, what's more important, learning how to draw the ball or learning how not to slice the ball? You know, I've stood here forever fixing people and getting people to stop slicing the ball. So the draw was my idea of, you know, how can I get the club face square at the bottom for the masses to, so the ball will quit going to the right. And
correct.
I believe that there's a couple of really major things that control the face. I've always believed that the grip controlled the face, and I believe the shoulders and the grip, not only the way you grip it, how strong you grip it, but how tight you hold it. And the masses of amateurs grip it sort of five times tighter than we do, pros. And that stops the face from crossing over. And then I believe that the shoulders play the next role. And then in the downswing, I always believe the right arm has to straighten out again before you start turning into it. And so many amateur golfers turn the right shoulder without the right arm releasing first. And I think that that would help them a lot. I talk a lot about standing on the side of the hill with the ball above your feet so you can get the feel of the arms and hands swinging down and rolling over.
Oh, okay. Well, I know it's explained in a lot more detail in your video, and I think that's probably, if you know, people have that challenge of, you know, slicing, I think that's something that they should really consider, is picking up your DVD. I think just by watching that and practicing some of the exercises and drills, it can be a pretty quick lesson in how to solve that that problem that certainly plagues a lot of golfers.
It turned out great. I loved it. It was, I think it was, I think it's very beneficial.
Perfect. Now, Bobby, are you doing some golf schools as well?
Yes, I do private one-day schools. I don't do group schools anymore in Scottsdale here in the winter, starting right now. We just finished overseeding at a Scottsdale Country Club, and we'll be open and with over, you know what overseeding is?
We
treat it, and we just came out of overseas, so we're ready to go. And I do private, all I teach privately, but I also do private one-on-one or two-on-one all-day schools. I don't do group schools here.
Perfect. Well, what we'll do, Bobby, is I'll leave the information of how to get a hold of your products, and I'll kind of list out the products right on our website. That's at golfreview.podomatic.com, and I'll also put those on our Golf Training Aid Reviews website, and you know, we'll leave that all that people can have a chance to take a look at that, and you know, get that information about your golf schools and also your DVD products. So that's fantastic. Bobby, thanks for your time. I know we kind of went over a little bit here today, but I think it was such valuable information for our listeners, and I think that, you know, people are really going to appreciate the great education that they got today. So thanks again, and enjoy the sunshine. I think it's raining so hard here, I'm wondering if people can't hear it over the line. But
well,
I'm sure we'll get over it here soon.
Thank you very much for having me, and to all of you out there, congratulations on your hero, I guess, your wonderful Mike Weir, your countryman. I know that everybody down here that loves Tiger was excited to see that match and see the outcome of it. You should be.
Yeah, that was really fun for us as Canadians, a proud moment in Canada for sure, to see Mike Weir take on such a great champion as Tiger Woods and beat him. So thanks for that.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, anytime. Give me a holler. It was great. Thanks. Have a great winter up there.
Thanks so much, Bobby. Well, that's it for another edition of Golf Training Aids Reviewed. I'm your host, Colin Gehring. Until next week, have a great golf week. Bye now.